And the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, the Big Ten previews are always a highlight of the season, and there is one remaining for this Iowa game. So if you are a member of the Goal Line, again, this is only $30, and it's $45 for non-members at Jack's Cafe.
You'll get to have a coach there. Danny Collins, the safety coach, was there on Friday to preview the Northwestern game, look back at the Nebraska game, and you'll get the same thing for this Iowa game. Again, 12 to noon, essentially. You can get there at 11:30, November the 18th, Jack's Cafe.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to yet another Gopher blowout win. As for the sixth time this season, Minnesota has a win of 27 points or more, which is an incredible stat in its own, as the Gophers notch their seventh win total, their fourth win in conference play, in a 31-3 victory over the Northwestern Wildcats in a game where really wasn't in doubt. After the first couple of series, Minnesota turns it on in the second half. Joe Rossi's defense comes to play. A lot of things to talk about, especially now that a lot of eyes are turning the page towards Hate Week, which we'll get into at the end of this episode with the founder of Dinkytown Athletes, my second cousin, the smartest person I know that can talk about Gopher football, Derek Burns. Derek, you and I have had way too many conversations, probably for your liking, in the last 24 hours since the Gophers took on Northwestern. Are you tired of hearing my voice yet?
No, I'm glad to be back, and I always love talking college football. And of course, after a Gopher win, they don't give away wins in the Big Ten, so it's going to be fun to talk about that and some of the new wrinkles we saw.
All right, so let's get into that. But before we do, we have to acknowledge the elephant in the room that was this last week. We got into a little bit of Dinkytown Athletes conversation, and it spurred a lot of conversation on Gopher Illustrated. So if you're not a member, first and foremost, become a member at GI, because Ryan does great work. But then number two, a lot of talk about Dinkytown Athletes, a lot of people jumping on the boat, Derek, and again, the time is now, people. The holidays are coming. You know, wear your gear. Talk about it. But this Dinkytown Athletes thing needs to be here when recruiting hits. And Ryan can tell you in a lot more detail. But I don't know, Derek, if you want to talk a little bit about that. But, you know, it was quite the week for Dinkytown Athletes.
Yeah, we thank you, everybody, for a good response and great conversation, and I think a lot of excitement. And thank you, too, for bringing it up on the last podcast. And I would just say a couple things. We've lined up an exclusive interview with Justin Wally as kind of a thank you to the GI members. So that'll be behind the paywall on GI and also behind the paywall for Dinkytown Athletes Discord server. And then also, you know, one more plug here. If you're listening, Monday, November 14th is the last day. If you want to become a member or make a donation of $10 or more, you're entered to win 3 tickets and 3 Club Cambria pre-tailgate passes for the Iowa game. So an extra incentive if you're kind of on the fence and thinking about it. Throw your hat in the ring, chance to win some tickets if you happen to be listening to this and we're not past Monday.
Yeah. So, Ryan, I know real quick, a lot's happening in the recruiting world right now. Before we break down this game, I'm not asking for an overview, but again, NIL is a major conversation piece here about what's happening recruiting-wise these days.
Yeah, Minnesota hosted a Wisconsin Badgers transfer over the weekend. I've got some intel on the board about that in terms of what the next steps are. So that was an interesting development. They also had a defensive tackle on campus for a rare in-season official visit, which a lot of kids during the season will take unofficial visits where they just pay their own way to come up. Well, they brought up a kid from Texas, a defensive tackle that recently decommitted from a Power 5 school, and he was on campus. So I'm going to have quotes up from him hopefully here by the time people are listening to this. So somehow, Luke, we're like, I don't know, 5-6 weeks away from signing day. I'm not ready for that mentally, spiritually, emotionally. whatever it may be, because it's going to go from Iowa week to Wisconsin week to a 3-week sprint to the finish line to National Signing Day to then, oh, by the way, I got to get married. So the next 6-7 weeks of this life of my life are not going to be great, but that's good for the people of Gopher Illustrated, and a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of you that didn't know and want to participate, there is a GoFundMe for Ryan's wedding put on by the Gopher Illustrated members, which it sounds funny, but this is just a way that Gopher Illustrated members could actually give a gift to Ryan, many of which weren't invited, like myself, who then promptly said, sorry, Ryan, I love you, but I can't do a third travel wedding in the same year. So sorry, Ryan. But I'll still send my gift. Don't worry. All right. So yeah, my shameless plug there for the GoFundMe, which I think is awesome, and a bunch of people have donated. So make sure it's GGR people, you know, Google Ryan Burns GoFundMe wedding and give some money to this guy and his lovely bride to be.
I'm not going to self promote it, but it's greatly appreciated. I had some people ask me, what am I going to put it towards? It's going 100% towards my honeymoon. And apparently, Derek, Luke isn't family in terms of the PJ Fleck acronym about forget about me, I love you. It says the last part, but he won't show up to my damn wedding. So apparently the 20 years we've been doing this podcast together, he's biked over to my house with his children. I've met his parents have been literally in my driveway, and I've been talking to them, but he can't find a way to make another travel wedding. So it's okay. It's fine. I'm not bitter. And that's going to be the theme of this podcast. I'm not bitter when talking about a 28-point victory.
All right. So let's talk about this this Gopher win. The Gophers win 31-3. Again, they cover the spread, which I thought there's no way they're going to cover a 17-point spread, but let alone here we are once again. Let's talk about when the Gophers were on offense. On the day, the Gophers again scored 33 points. Points on offense, 366 yards of total offense. 302 of those came on the ground, only 64 through the air. Ethan Kaliak-Manis was 7 of 13 on the day. We'll get into him later. I think we have to start with this rushing game, guys. Again, 302 yards, 5.2 yard average. Again, Mo Ibrahim was just phenomenal again, and very much you can see that he is playing through injury. 36 carries, 178 yards, 3 touchdowns. He leads FBS and all of the FBS in touchdowns now. Just a phenomenal game from him, and then we got to see sprinkle in some Trey Potts here, even some the freshman Evans as well. So Derek, you know, what did you see from this offensive line in this game, and additionally, what did you see out of these running backs?
Well, I think it was probably the offensive line's best conference game. It actually didn't start that way. They made some nice adjustments, credit to the coaching staff. You know, Nebraska likes to play quarters coverage. They did mix in a fair amount of straight up man coverage, a little bit of man press, which is kind of unusual for them. But essentially in the running game, they tried to disrupt Minnesota by running some weak side stunts and slants. And early on, that pretty much worked for the first couple drives, if you can think back. But again, the Minnesota coaching staff did a good job. They brought a few wrinkles in. One that I know Ryan and I talked about, which was flipping the running back from one side of the quarterback to the other, which basically you're flipping the way that you're going to run zone, and doing that right before the snap. So that obviously took Northwestern out of their TE stunt, which is the tackle stunting out and the end looping around, which is what they wanted to do on the backside of the zone. And so in this case, you know, when you flip the running back around, you're running directly into that slant or stunt, which is better. So that was one of the two wrinkles that jumped out at me that really helped them. And it allowed, you know, I think, yes, the offensive line had what I think was their best game, but it was those little wrinkles in the running game that gave a little bit of, it took a little bit of pressure off. It gave a little bit of help to the offensive line. So they weren't just running uphill, blocking uphill, as we've talked about in some of these previous games. You know, it gave a little bit of breathing room and was able to isolate that backside defensive end, so he's not crashing in and the safety's not crashing downhill. And so add all those things up and it just got better and better and better. And Mo was Mo. You know, if you're not anything outside of a plus one box and full steam downhill, Mo is going to have a good day, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, I love the way that Kirk Soraka was tremendous. I think in his run game, niches in turn or just little adjustments. Derek mentioned the running back flipping from side to side, but Derek, I know that we talked about it in the pre-production meeting as well in terms of, was this the most stretched zone that we've seen Minnesota run here in Big Ten play?
Well, that was the other thing real quick. If you know, we've kind of lamented in previous episodes that the Gophers have struggled with outside zone and what they had been attempting to do on most outside zone is try and get outside the offensive tackle. And you know, what they were seeing is that force defender, whether it be the defensive end or an outside linebacker, really coming up and pressing that back inside. So the running back's trying to bounce it outside. It basically gets strung out, a lot of tackles for loss, and it's been frustrating. So in this game, they ran a lot more of stretch outside zone, which is essentially the goal of that is not for the running back to get outside of the tackle. It's not a sideline play. You stretch out the defense by making that same blocking scheme. So you're running an outside zone scheme as opposed to inside. So you're stretching out those defensive linemen, but the play side tackle doesn't have to hook the defensive end. He can actually just stock block effectively the defensive end. And what ends up happening is the running back is able to cut off of the play side. So the hole ends up being somewhere in the middle. It's not a backside cut usually, and that really hurt Northwestern. I mean, that killed them. That stretch zone play was kind of a revelation. So, again, to Ryan's point, it was really nice to see that offensive coaching staff make that adjustment and say, look, we're not going to try and run outside zone and pin the corner and try to get to the sideline. We're just going to stretch them out and run that mid zone, and that really worked effectively.
Yeah, I mean, that was the bread and butter and just the different little nuances that got Kirk Cherok. Again, we're just talking about flipping the running back and then just making a slight adjustment to the outside zone game. And then you look up at the end of the day and you rush for over 300 yards in a Big Ten team. Now, I'm well aware. I talked about it on the preview episode with Luke. Northwestern hasn't won a game on American soil in 13 months. But defensively, I think they're an average Big Ten team, and what the Minnesota was able to do on the ground there was exciting. Now, Luke, what I want to point out is, number one, Mo Ibrahim, I will continue to just – I don't know what's past the ether at this point, maybe the black hole, but can we please continue to have the conversation? I know that Andy Greeter from the Pioneer Press and good friend of the podcast, Chip Scoggins of the Star Tribune, I think they're getting to be on board where I was a couple weeks ago and what we talked about. Mo's number needs to be – like, they need to acknowledge Mo after his time here is done. Now, I don't know if that's going to be – again, it's probably going to be in three games, but, like, he passes Rodney Smith. And what I want to ask you, Luke, is do you agree with this statement? Because I have Mo in the tier of Darryl Thompson and Lawrence Maroney. I think those three running backs are in the tier by themselves. I don't think there's any question that DT or Maroney had more, you know, for the lack of a better phrase of speech, you know, God-given ability in terms of athleticism and size. Like, what Mo has done with his size and his stature and his athleticism and his speed, there is no Gopher running back in my mind that has maximized their talent more than Mo Ibrahim. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Oh, I definitely agree with the statement. I think the thing to keep in mind too is, Ryan, do you remember when we first started recording episodes and talking about him? We were begging for the Gophers to give more carries to Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith, and Mo just kept being effective, and he's proved all of us wrong, right? I don't think we were alone in that thinking, like, you know, this guy's good, but he doesn't quite have the burst. He doesn't quite have the home run ability in it. And it's proved to not really matter because he's just so efficient and so effective. In terms of, like, retiring his number, I don't have a problem with that. I just don't know
how. I just think it's going to have to be like a Ring of Honor thing.
Yeah,
like,
I've heard you talk about that.
If you're going to do Mo, you got to do DT, you got to do Esslinger, you got to do Maroney, and again, you could probably put two or three other names in that. But I would love, as we talked about, and we don't need to spend a ton of time on it, I think they need to think about seriously doing like a Vikings Ring of Honor thing, like the Vikings just did with Jared Allen with his number, because it's just, you need to start to acknowledge, like, there have been good things and good players that have come through here in the last 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
And it, I think it's time to start acknowledging them in a more profound sense.
Yeah. And, you know, Mo currently stands with the most 100-yard games in a row, right, in FBS history. I don't know if it's FBS history, but it's currently
recent. Weird stat where it's like recent in like the modern era, which is like since 2000 or something. It's a weird stat.
Yeah. And you know, he currently leads FBS in number of touchdowns. Now there's a few games left, so that could absolutely change. But that said, you know, he has been very special. And the other thing to note is people keep saying, well, he's a sixth-year guy. Like, he's played so many more games.
He's done another more games, Luke. What do you mean?
The reality is he hasn't. Dumbest argument I've ever heard. He hasn't.
You look at the stats like you're going to get to, and he's done it on like 10 less games.
Yeah, he's like, I think he's at 37 games, right? It's just like, oh, my goodness. Yeah. God. I don't know why people try to discount like accomplishments all the time. Like, just enjoy the moment. You've got the three more games, right? A potential in watching Mo Ibrahim, and just enjoy it. It's been a heck of a ride. Enjoy it while you can. And I think we do have to transition in the running game, because we got to talk about this a little bit more.
I want to ask Derek that same question I asked you, because Derek, again, you've been following Gopher football for a long time. You were a part of this team. Where do you think, and again, I guess I'll get back to my Dan Barrero-esque question of, do you agree that there may not be another player in recent memory that has maximized his talents more than Mo Ibrahim?
Without a doubt. Couple things that I'll just add. He has the best vision of any running back I've ever seen, any Gopher running back I've ever seen. I mean, David Cobb had incredible vision, and Mo is better. The way he's able to read the defenses, and it's not just pick the hole, right? I mean, you get the ball and you're looking, the way he runs with his eyes, which I know is a cliche, is something else. And all the other things you guys mentioned, ability to run through contact. One thing, just to bring it back to this game for a second, just these little nuances that you pick up with Mo. If you guys notice, when he breaks through to the second or third level, If the secondary defender coming to tackle him doesn't break down, he will keep running and slash, and he'll just run through arm tackles. If the defender, like the safety, does break down, he runs straight at him, which is such a great technique, right? Because he reads that, okay, the defender's breaking down, I'm going to run straight over him. Because when a defender breaks down, they're on their heels, right? They're not running at you, they're not bringing force, so he brings the contact. Whereas if the defender's coming in and not breaking down, he will just run through arm tackles. So it's those little things that you pick up with him that are just so good. And again, the vision is just it's unparalleled.
Yeah, the other thing that we do need to touch on here, we maybe should just have a special episode dedicated to Mo at some point when all is said and done. But the reality is, in this specific game, like Trey Potts played maybe his best game this season, post-injury, right? 10 carries for 63 yards. He started to look like he was being more decisive in his decisions and just running harder. Additionally, we got to see our first carries from Zach Evans, 6 carries, 29 yards. And honestly, you know, the future looks bright, not to mention that Ethan Kaliak-Manis carried the ball 4 times for 28 yards. So the reality is, like, you know, Mo is dinged up. We need to find ways, but he's almost kind of superhuman in the ways that he's able to continue to go. While you can see he's got a little bit of a limp in his giddy up. But Derek, I was impressed with Potts, Evans, Kaliak-Manis, even Bryce, you know, Bryce Williams had 2 carries for 4 yards, but you know, it wasn't just Mo. It was the rest of the stable of ball carriers that had success against Northwestern.
Yeah, I would agree with you that I think it was Trey Potts looked much more back to form, ran more decisively. He himself ran through a couple tackles, made some really nice cuts on that stretch zone that we talked about. So that seemed to fit him well, again, as opposed to some of the outside zones that we've seen the Gophers struggle with. So I think that really helped. Zach Evans, it was fun to see him get a couple reps. And what pleasantly surprised me there was, for a young guy to be running through arm tackles and running through contact is somewhat unusual. That's usually more of a developed, you know, and players come in and they put on lean mass and they get stronger, it usually takes a year or two to develop that type of you know, game strength. And he looks like he's right there. I mean, he's got good athleticism and good size, but just his ability to run through contact as well and get some yards after contact is what jumped out to me.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a ton more to add. You all have kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of this is the second straight home game where Trey Potts has looked really good in terms of just knowing where he wants to go, being decisive, trusting himself, trusting his eyes, trusting that he's a Big Ten athlete, making guys miss. Again, we saw it against Rutgers. We saw it here again against Northwestern. And I don't know that it'll matter a ton here in the final two games because Mo's just going to get 30 carries regardless. I've just accepted that at this point. But it is promising to see Zach Evans look like he did in that in the spring game because he had surgery in August. Has just been healthy here to start November. I know that there are some people who already think that he should be the number two back. I would say I think we're putting the cart before the horse there, but no doubt that the future's bright. I do want to say, though, that I know we kind of circumnavigated, and it's my fault for that, but the Minnesota Moving Company continues to just get better, I think. I mean, Derek thought it was their best game. I would agree with them. I would continue to say that the tight ends really are just such an asset in the run game. Now, Pro Football Focus isn't the end-all be-all, especially with grades, but I believe that Brevin Spanford and Nick Haller are the two highest graded Big Ten tight ends in the run game, number one and number two. Like what they're able to do in terms of being able to seal an edge or come across the line, crack back from an H is just – It's something that I hope people don't take for granted because Minnesota has been blessed with some really good run blocking tight ends, starting with guys like Coe Keefe, among others. And there was a lot of questions about what is it going to look like with Brevin and Nick Hallerup. And I think those two guys have answered the bell. I mean, even Brevin gets, he gets dinged up in this game. Looks like his left shoulder came out, gets put back in and he toughs his way through it. But what they're getting right now, I think on the offensive line, Derek, is just, those guys are, maybe it's that they're gelling. Maybe it's because I think they're playing with a little bit lower pad level, something that PJ Fleck mentioned. But, I would say Fleck said in his postgame presser that he thought during that three-game losing streak that the offensive line was just trying to out-athleticize people. And now they haven't the last 3 weeks. They've been playing, more technically sound, more whatever you want to call it. But they're going to need that type of performance against Northwestern the next 2 weeks against Iowa and Wisconsin because those defenses and those front sevens are going to be as good as what they saw in that three-game stretch against teams like Illinois, against teams like Penn State. And, again, you're hoping that they have kind of learned from their mistakes there and hopefully can bring it together on Senior Day this weekend.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the passing game here. Tanner Morgan, again, out from this game with an injury, upper body injury. I don't think we've gotten clarification on what specifically that injury is, but let's not delve into that too much. Ethan gets the start. He was 7 of 13 for 64 yards. If memory serves, at halftime, he was actually 3 for 9. I don't remember the specific yardage. And the reality of this situation is, guys, like that 3 for 9 was not particularly good. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I know that Ethan was phenomenal in the Nebraska win and deserves a lot of credit, but he missed throws early in this game. And I think that in part is why he only had 13 attempts, but in large part too, they didn't need to throw. But this wasn't a great game from Ethan. His legs were definitely, again, an asset, no question. But ultimately, he missed some throws, some of them easy throws even, where you're kind of like, whoa, what happened there? In the end, it wasn't a great showing from him. Now, it doesn't mean that he doesn't have a bright future. It doesn't mean that he shouldn't be the one to start the next couple of games, pending injury to Tanner. But in the end, he wasn't awesome. But he's still a freshman. So, Derek, I know you've had the opportunity to see the maturation of quarterbacks that you played with, over time. And it being his first home start, what was kind of your observations of Ethan here, and what are maybe some expectations, and how should people digest this performance by Ethan?
Sure. A couple things stand out to me. The first that kind of surprised me was usually with a young quarterback where you see them struggle is actually with their pre and post snap reads. Hitting their spots usually isn't as big of an issue. It's, again, it's making the mental decisions. And I actually thought that was, he did that fine. Where he was off was hitting his spots, which is usually what you see in a more veteran quarterback. They're usually on with their pre and post snap reads. And there are some games when they're on, some games when they're off in terms of hitting their spots. So, for a young quarterback, that was a little bit unusual, I think, that the area he struggled in was just hitting his spots. Again, I thought he missed a couple of checkdowns, but for the most part, I think mentally he made good decisions. The other thing is, when you play a team like Northwestern that plays quarters coverage, they did mix in some man, they used man cushion, you're not going to get much down the field. So you knew it going into the game, and certainly the way the game unfolded with Northwestern's defense, you weren't going to get corner routes, go routes, you know, again, nothing down the field. So what they needed to do then was you have to hit hitches, outs, shallow crosses. You know, they mixed in some RPO slants later in the game when Northwestern was trying so hard to stop the run. And those were the routes that he struggled on. So the timing routes just weren't there. Even some of the completions didn't look clean. And, you know, those underneath routes, that's how you defeat quarters coverage, is you have to be on with those underneath routes. And, you know, I wasn't in the huddle, obviously. I can't give any more context in terms of why. Just looked like, you know, he was squeezing the ball a lot, you know, getting some good speed on the ball, but just was off with his targets.
Yeah, that was the frustrating part. Was four throws in the missed, you know, you missed four bad throws in the first half, and they're all timing. Again, he misses a deep out to Dalen Wright, misses a slant to Dalen Wright, misses a post to Dalen Wright, and then he misses a shallow crosser to MBS, which I still don't know what was going on there. But those are throws you have to make if you're going to beat Iowa and Wisconsin. It's good enough to beat Northwestern because Joe Rossi's defense allowed 3 points. But imagine that the game script is like Purdue and he misses those throws. And to Luke's point, we're not saying that Ethan sucks. I mean, I just feel like that whenever you criticize somebody, unless it's Tanner Morgan, which everybody just apparently has put in the bucket that he is terrible, which you guys should all be ashamed for. But like, it looked like a kid in a second career start, and that's okay because Minnesota won. But that performance isn't going to beat Iowa and Wisconsin. And I'm not saying that there's no doubt that there's a higher ceiling for Ethan Kaliak-Manis than there is of any Gopher quarterback I've covered in the last 12 years. But you also see the floor in the passing game when those are the timing throws he can't hit, where he's got plenty of time in the pocket and he can't hit the slant, or he can't hit a shallow cross, or he can't hit an out or a post. Like, if he just hits Dalen Wright on the post, which I don't know why Matt Millen said he dropped.
Yeah, I thought that was broadcast. Bad. Yeah,
I was befuddled by that comment because I watched it back. I was like, he didn't drop it. The ball is too far in front of him. Now, did Ethan have a better second half? Yeah,
absolutely.
He completed all four of his passes. But, like, I want to see more, you know, because to the point I think we're all trying to make here is Ethan's ceiling, we all believe, is higher. Tanner Morgan is the known quantity, and Tanner Morgan wasn't healthy to play in this game, and I don't know that he'll even be healthy to play against Iowa. But it's you're going to need more consistency from the quarterback. And I don't know that you'll get that against Iowa, because it'll be the best defense that Minnesota faces all year. And then Wisconsin will be on the same level as what I think Illinois and Penn State were. So it's almost like Ethan's got to play better, but the competition and the defensive schemes are going to get more complicated. They're going to get, you know, just better overall defenses. So, you know, it comes back to the whole almost chicken and egg thing, Luke, of there were certainly plays in that game where Tanner Morgan would have been sacked and Ethan Kaliak-Manis escapes. Mm-hmm. Or you could argue the run game was better because Ethan was a threat with his legs, which I would agree. But there are also, like, I think of those four first half throws that Ethan missed that were timing throws. I'd argue Tanner makes at least two of those. And then the passing game doesn't look incredibly sad again. But then it comes back to, it's just something different every week, Luke, with this passing game. And that's what we continue to stress, is 1 week it's the offensive line, 1 week it's the pass catchers, 1 week it's the quarterback. And now we're 10 weeks into the season, and one of my favorite Derek Burns-isms is, you just kind of are what you are at this point of the season. You're not going to change, more or less. And that's where it was funny to ask PJ Fleck after the game. He hates this question now because I'm the only one who asked it. This is like three straight press conferences I've asked him about the passing game, and I get a three-word answer. He stares through me for 5 to 6 seconds and is like, you got a follow-up to that? And I'll be like, yeah, so why would you say that? And then, again, he laments the passing game as much as I do, as much as Luke does, Derek does, and you, the listener. But it's like, I'm like, well, what's the answer? And he's like, I can't give you the answer other than the players just have to do it.
Yeah.
And for the context of this specific game, it's like, throws were there for Ethan to make, and they were simple throws within a collegiate offense. They're timing throws. They're throws that these guys are working on at practice. He just didn't execute, and that's why the passing game looks incredibly, incredibly sad again.
Yeah, I do think we need to touch real quickly. You know, Ethan was, as you mentioned, an asset in the running game. He is elusive. He adds an extra dimension, you know, in the run game as well. He avoids getting sacked, etc. And we also got to also acknowledge the fact that he didn't have a turnover, right? Those are all big things. So,
see, I hate that point right there. I shouldn't say hate, but it's like, his errant throws just didn't happen to go to anybody. It's like, yes, he didn't have a turnover, but he only threw the ball 13 times because Minnesota ran for 300 yards and were up so much.
Right. I mean, that's a scheme decision, right? Like, ultimately, that's a scheme decision that they made.
Yeah, with the whole Fleck just decided, I mean, we're running the ball so well, so why throw it? You want to just drain the clock. But it's also like, he just abandoned the passing game, essentially, more or less, again.
Yeah, and the thing that's frustrating, and we've talked about this before, you can't just turn on the passing game, right? It's something you have to build and throughout the season, and they haven't done a good job of doing that all year. And they're going to need it against Iowa and Wisconsin to close out the season and in whatever bowl game. We should just highlight real quickly, Daniel Jackson again leads them in receiving, 3 for 34 yards. And then Brevin Spanford again, 3 receptions, 16 yards, and he arguable that he should have had more. You know, Dalen Wright got more targets. He was unfortunately on the receiving end of not great passes, and also a phenomenal play by the defender that forced the fumble. But you know, it's a ball he's got to hang on to. But in the end, yeah, the passing game isn't something you're going to write home to. In the end, you know, the PJ Fleck formula often is like, hey, we're going to do what it takes to win, even if you don't like it, guys. So. I guess any parting thoughts here on offense that we want to get in before we move on to defense? I'll start with you, Derek.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'll just say, you know, the passing game, when the teams that I've been a part of, when you're struggling to this degree, and I think PJ would agree, and he said as much, some games it's one thing, another play, one play, it's this goes wrong, another. I think they just have to go back to base fundamentals. And I know we used to hate that as players when coaches would say that because it just sounded lazy. But that is, at times, I don't know. I don't know if they're overcomplicating things. I don't know if they're trying to focus on too many different skills to try and hone in, or what it is from a coaching perspective. But if I'm, you know, a part of that passing game coaching staff, so I guess that's receivers, you know, quarterback, whatever, go back to base fundamentals. And I think the point Ryan is trying to make is, yes, we're celebrating a win. There's lots of great things to talk about, and we have more to talk about here that are positive, but we're trying to look ahead and see that you can't beat either of these next two teams with no passing game. It's just period. So, you know, that's what we're trying to come to grips with, is how do you salvage something and go back to basics and make some of the easier plays and give yourself, you know, more of a chance to succeed in all facets.
The Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, these previews are coming to an end. I haven't been able to make the last two because of conflicts, but I will be doing my darndest to be there on Friday. This is an event that I always enjoy getting to hear from the coaches, also connecting with other Goal Line Club members, getting a great lunch at Jack's Cafe, getting in and out because of convenient parking.
Again, it's in downtown Minneapolis. You don't have to, if you work downtown, you're thinking, well, I don't know if I can afford to circle for two blocks and then not find parking. They have their own free dedicated lot. It's fantastic, fantastic food. You'll be in and amongst Gopher fans. You'll be able to listen to a Gopher football assistant coach look back at the Northwestern win, talk a little bit about the Iowa game coming up, and it all happens in a short period of time between that 11:45 and 1 p.m. so you can get in and out of there on time. So if you want to learn more, go to goallineclub.org, click on events at the top of the page, $30 for members, $45 for non-members.
All right, let's talk about when the Gophers are on defense. Again, a great showing for them. I think I sarcastically tweeted you guys, what a complete failure of a day. Northwestern scored 3 points. I expect shutouts. But the reality is the defense, again, was phenomenal. This isn't a great Northwestern offense. But on the day, they were able to hold Northwestern to 278 yards of total offense. Northwestern was 3 for 12 on third down and 0 for 3 on fourth down. They got the lion's share of their yardage through the air with 278. Evan Hull was held to 13 carries for 54 yards. Probably more importantly, he wasn't a massive killer in the receiving game. He did have 4 for 44 yards with a long of 31. But ultimately, the defense, they really played well. And Derek, to me, the thing that really stood out was their ability to get pressure on the quarterback in this game.
Yeah, I think pressure on the quarterback continues to just notch up each game. I would say, in the skill positions for Northwestern, I just have to be objectively honest here, not a lot of team speed from Northwestern's offense, which gives you some advantages on defense. But I would agree with you, the pressure continues to look better, specifically the corner crash or corner blitz. That's sort of become, I think I would say, Minnesota's go-to, pressure package. I think they ran it at least two, if not three times with Terrell Smith, and then also Beanie Bishop ended up getting a sack later in the game with that same blitz. So Northwestern wasn't able to solve that. Additionally, I have to give a compliment to the Gopher defensive coaching staff. It just didn't appear that anything that Northwestern was able to do caught Minnesota off guard. Minnesota was always in good position. Northwestern's had a lot of success running traditional screens and bubble screens, and that was the number one thing that stood out to me, was Minnesota was really able to stifle any of the bubble screens, and they tried 3 or 4 screens, traditional screens, to Evan Hall, and they got nothing. So kudos to the defensive coaching staff. They had that very well coached, and Minnesota was able to cover it.
Well, if you're not going to take the cheese, I will. Ja Joyner continues to be Minnesota's best pass rusher, and it's not close. And the context that's needed for this game is Northwestern's left tackle, Peter Skoronski, is a projected top 15 overall pick in the upcoming NFL draft. And Ja Joyner gave him the business. Like, I even saw some Northwestern media, which apparently they exist, and I found them. But Northwestern media say Skoronski hasn't looked like this all season. I mean, Ja drew 2 holding calls against Skoronski, ends the day with 5 total pressures. I mean, he just continues to be a one-man wrecking crew, and he did it against what I think is the best tackle in the Big Ten. And so I look forward or project forward to an Iowa offensive tackle group that's not good, and they're going to need Ja Joyner in the worst way. Now, if I'm going to nitpick, Ja Joyner's got to turn 5 pressures into 2 sacks and finish on these plays. But I'm also not one to say that getting 2 holding calls is massive, including one of them was on that 4th down play that Tyler Newbin batted away. So even if that guy catches it, it's going to be negated anyway. But I also think Trill Carter has really found something here, hopefully in the last 2 games. I think Trill has played 2 of his best games the last 2 weeks. You saw in that Tyler Newbin interception that It was Trill Carter who, once he recognizes that it's a pass, sheds the I believe it was the left guard, gets in the face of the quarterback. Quarterback doesn't see Tyler Newbin playing center field, which I will go to my grave saying right now, Tyler Newbin is playing a center field that would make Byron Buxton blush right now with his fourth interception. But Ja Joyner is someone that has really come on, and I cannot stress to you, Luke, that they are going to need him and rely on him massively in these next two games.
Ryan, was this Jalen Logan Redding's first game back after injury, too?
Jalen Logan Redding has not missed a game with injury what's that I'm aware of.
I think
Jalen Logan Redding, by the way, has found something. I think it was on one of those turnover on down. Actually,
who is the
Jalen Logan Redding play that people aren't talking about enough is third down, final drive for Northwestern before halftime. It's Jalen Logan Redding against Peter Skoronski, who gets pressure in the face of the quarterback. The quarterback can't deliver the third down throw. It falls just short of a wide open receiver. I think if that throw was on the money, it's a touchdown. But because Jalen Logan Redding gets pressure in the face of the quarterback, he can't step into the throw. The pass falls incomplete. Northwestern settles for three instead of seven. And how much different is that game coming out of halftime, 14-3 versus 14-7, when Northwestern gets the ball?
All right, so I was completely wrong on that. I thought that Redding had been out, so I'm obviously screwed.
Danny Strigow is...
I know he's out, but I thought they had one defensive lineman back that had...
Gage Keys
is still out. Okay. I think this is the third or fourth straight game. I don't know that he's going to be ready before the bowl game or not. Which is unfortunate. So anything they can get from these defensive tackles in terms of interior pass rush. And I think maybe Derek, again, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I mean, one of the reasons why Minnesota had, I think it was so much more noticeable that they were getting pressure is there was an actual pocket push from the interior guys.
Yeah.
Now I'm not saying like they were always in the face, but they're like, I think about that Beanie Bishop play where he gets the sack off the corner blitz. Well, there's nowhere for the quarterback to run there because Ja Joyner has pressed the left tackle behind him. So if the quarterback spins to his right shoulder away from Bishop, he's going to run into Ja, and he sees Beanie coming in his face, but he can't get away from the pressure because he's got the interior of his offensive line right in his face. And so then Beanie's able to secure the sack. So, again, I just think that the interior push has been really good.
All right. So defensively, you know, when I watch this defense right now, the guys obviously you're hitting that are really standing out, Ja Joyner, but, you know, you mentioned Tyler Newbin, but also Cody Lindenberg. So what are you seeing out of, you know, Newbin and Lindenberg right now, Derek? Defensively, to me, they just seem to be kind of that identity and those guys that are just showing up play after play.
Yeah, I think for the just like the Nebraska game, Cody Lindenberg is challenged against a scheme like Northwestern to be able to go out and go sideline to sideline on things like those bubble screens and things like that. And his ability to chase is great. I mean, that's his speed is his asset. So you can see him getting more reps is helping him mentally. I mean, that's the part of his game that he needs to develop is being able to read and diagnose. You know, you have a guy like Mariano Sorimarin, that's second nature to him now because the amount of experience he's had. But Cody Lindenberg, he has to learn that. So he has to seed multiple formations and personnel and teams and plays and be able to recognize things quickly. And it's coming along. So he has the physical speed to be able to play at a very high level. But as we all know, if you're not there mentally, you can't play fast. So that's coming along. And, you know, we've said it about Tyler Newbin, but I think it bears repeating that I think he has been given more of a free rein than ever before, which is great. I think the coaching staff are letting him, as Ryan said, play center field and be able to read the eyes of the quarterback to be able to jump routes, which is not something this staff has typically wanted defensive backs to do because it can be risky at times, but it's certainly paying off. And both of those guys, I would just say too, Newbin and the other safety, Jordan their ability Ryan. In the run. Yeah. Sorry. Apologize to that young man. Their ability to fill in the run in this game was very good as well. You know, when typically when teams bring two tight they'll bring their outside linebackers up, and then they'll bring one of their safeties up for run fits, and they look pretty solid in, there as well.
Well, I would just add to that that, I mean, you think about that first turnover on downs that Minnesota gets in the first quarter. They get fourth and short. It's Jordan Howden that comes through and gets a hit on Hall, and then it's Terrell Smith who, when he was on the field for this game, looks like he got a little bit banged up, but from what I've heard, Minnesota's not too worried about it. Terrell Smith was incredibly physical in this game. Same thing goes for Jordan Howden. I think this was Michael Dixon's best game, yeah. Number 11 out there. I mean, he was one of the guys coming into the season that I was most excited about to see. And while, again, he's been out there for probably 60% of defensive plays, you haven't seen those splash plays. Well, sounds like they challenged him this week because, again, he's going to be the guy after Tyler Newbin. He's going to be the guy after Jordan Howden. I mean, he's going to be probably your playmaking safety next year. And that's where you saw him in the run game. I mean, we talked about it in the preview episode. Northwestern throws 2/3 of their passes near the line of scrimmage. And you saw Michael Dixon blow up multiple screens, make good plays and splays, and just be able to be a playmaker. And so whether it's, again, you can pick any guy in the secondary in this game. And that's the exciting part about it is now you face Wisconsin and Iowa, not exactly blowing people away in the passing game. And Minnesota is going to need their safeties to be physical and their corners to be physical to be able to put themselves in advantageous situations against Spencer Petras and Graham Mertz. So that's what has me excited from this game. Again, Northwestern's skill position players, not great. Northwestern played four different quarterbacks in this game because of injury. Not great. But what I take away from a bad offense is the secondary played as physical as we've seen, and I want them to continue that in these final two games of the season because if Minnesota is going to have a chance to do something that they haven't done since 1990, and that's beat Iowa and Wisconsin in the same season, which to make you feel old, Mr. or Mrs. Listener, I wasn't alive yet for those games. So if they're going to do something they haven't done in 32 years, this secondary is going to play a big part in that.
Legacy Life and Law brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, last week I questioned whether or not your friend had been able to get an estate plan, get his will and affairs in order. This week I'm challenging you to make him call the good people at Legacy Life and Law, because as you and I know, a good plan is what you need for those unexpected moments, and Legacy Life and Law can help you with that.
Yeah, and unfortunately I had a friend, you know, someone pass. Or I heard at least a story here within my household about somebody who passed and they were looking for a will. There wasn't one. So now there's a big kerfuffle going on between family members and loved ones. And I don't want to be able to put my family and loved ones in that situation. You need to have a will. You need to have a plan. It's not fun to talk about. It's not fun to do. But you're an adult and that's life. So if you want to learn more, go to legacyandlifelaw.com/GGR. You're able to find out a lot more, and they can put you in touch with the people that you need to. So again, legacyandlifelaw.com/GGR.
Okay, 31-3 victory, and we still have to talk about special teams, Mr. Ryan Burns. I know this is a topic that's always near and dear to your heart. I have to say Matthew Trickett, once again, excellent. 1-for-1 on field goals, 41-yard attempt that he was able to bang through. Also, 4-for-4 on extra points. I imagine that you have some issue with the punting, once again. I imagine you probably have some issue on the few number of kicks that the Gophers returned, specifically the kick returns. And I also imagine you have issue maybe with the punt returns as well. So the floor is yours, good sir.
Well, here's my issue. The question you're going to ask me is which is the issue? I just feel like people are getting apathetic to special teams being incredibly meh, that they now think it's good. And I'm just like sitting here thinking, we're watching very different football games. But to your point, like if I want to, I think it's just best if we look at this game, like special teams, we can look at it micro, like within this game. I mean, Mark Crawford, 5 punts, 2 inside the 20, a 39 average, like woohoo. It's like, he's incapable of flipping the field outside of the Penn State game. And you look at the situations you needed him to flip the field against Northwestern. You punt from your 25 and your 22, and you get a 37 and a 38-yard punt. Like, that's not going to work next week against Iowa. I would agree that Matthew Trickett largely has been really good. And some of you are going to nitpick me and say, Ryan, he missed one kick all season. What are you talking about? I'm telling you, Matthew Trickett has been really good. But that one kick in the context of this season,
yeah, it was big.
That chippy 28-yarder against Purdue was one of the two biggest plays in that loss to Purdue, which we'll get into all the permutations of how Minnesota's in the West still. That Michael Brown-Stevens drop and that missed 28-yard field goal are maybe looming massive at the end of the season. But I will agree, Matthew Trickett has been a net positive for special teams. Dragan Kesich has been a net positive for special teams. I don't know that. I think I just see Dragan Kesich in a different view, maybe. Like, it's great that he can kick everything out through the end zone, but I actually think Minnesota's coverage units are assets, and they never get to use them because Mark Crawford, you're going to get 38 yards if you need 58, and you're going to get 38 yards if you need 20. Like 38, like you're going to get what you're going to get. That's why Minnesota's 13th in the Big Ten in yards per punt. But like the kick return units, like what? Kick and punt return. I just like, it's not Quentin Redding's fault. It's not. Like, I think he's much better than what they've had the last couple of years there. But I think we're all kidding ourselves if we think kick and punt return are actually helping. I just, over the totality of 10 games, I just disagree that they are. I actually looked into the stats, Luke, because if I'm going to have an opinion, gosh darn it, I'm going to do my homework. And that's where I looked at Quentin Redding's kick returns this year. Minnesota is plus 23 yards of field position in 10 games. Now, if you take out the 71-yarder the long one that put Minnesota at the 4-yard line against Illinois, which, again, I'm nitpicking stats. I am acknowledging that. But if you take out the longest kick return Minnesota's had in 4 years, they are minus 50, I believe, on kick returns for field position compared to a fair catch. Now, I'm also acknowledging that Quentin Redding has given them something in the punt return game. But I would also say, I still don't understand why Minnesota's punt returners are 60 yards deep, and we're talking about Big Ten punts. Like, the ball bounces and then rolls another 15, 20 yards, and you're screwing your offense and field position. So why this always makes me so angry is because I look forward to the Iowa game, where LeVar Woods is a special teams coordinator for Iowa. Rob Wenger is the special teams coordinator for Minnesota. Now, I look at the Iowa game. They blocked a punt last week. Heaven forbid Minnesota even attempts to block a punt at any point in the Rob Wenger era. Heaven forbid Minnesota blocks an extra point or a field goal. Now, I understand that they did block a punt against, I believe, Michigan in 20. And then I think they did it in 2018. We haven't seen it in a long time. LeVar Woods changes games for Iowa as the 17th highest paid only special teams coordinator in college football. Rob Wenger is the 24th highest paid only special teams coordinator in college football. Why this irritates me so much each and every week is, which one do you think is actually getting special, air quote, special teams? Which one do you think is getting the most bang for their buck? I hope it doesn't play a part in the game on Saturday, on senior day at Huntington Bank Stadium. But I just don't understand how people can look at Gopher special teams and look me or type to me with a straight face, Ryan, they've been very good, because I just look at you through this proverbial microphone or this screen, and I'm looking at you thinking, what in the world are you talking about? Now, Derek, I'm stepping off my yet weekly appearance upon the special team soapbox to say, I'm probably crazy. I probably am just so jaded about this whole thing, I can't look at it through the correct lens, but I'll let you have the floor.
Well, I don't know. I've commented a few times in the past, and I guess I'm just going to be kind of repeating myself. But the approach to special teams, I really believe, is for this team is to try not to – it's just to play par, right, to not let themselves be hurt by special teams. And it's an approach. That's a decision. what I think you're saying, and I guess what I would say is there is an opportunity to for special teams to be an asset for it to win you games. Now, I'll agree with Luke. I think that field goals and extra points has been very good this year. I think that has been an asset, but you're right. I mean, you take something like punt return. They don't block punts. They don't really run big returns. They typically just do punt safe. Well, the purpose of punt safe is to not have a team run a fake punt against you. So you're just saying, and I think the answer to your question, I don't know, but my guess, the answer to your question about why does Minnesota line their punt returners up so deep? Because they don't want to get anything kicked over their head and pinned inside the 10-yard line. So it's a risk-averse strategy for special teams. So I guess, you know, they're trying to avoid it hurting them, but could they be better? Certainly. Absolutely. They could definitely be an asset.
Yeah, I'll say this. Like, special teams, you know, there's kind of an approach, and then there's a pure talent, right? So from an approach standpoint, I agree with Derek that they are risk averse, and I don't necessarily always disagree with that approach, but at certain times you have to be able to take some risk and put yourself in a position to be a net positive, towards the game script. Right. But then it comes down to talent. I think Matthew Trickett has improved drastically and has been a net positive. I do acknowledge though, Ryan, that he has one, like that miss against Purdue is probably one of the bigger key plays of the season, which again is just disappointing, you know. But then again, they're very much a plus in with Dragan Kesic in terms of consistency, like kicking it through the end zone. But you're right.
The thing I would say to that is, like, I'm not trying to disparage Matthew Trickett or Dragan Kesic.
No, I'm not either.
Dragan Kesic has a great leg, but then we get into the nuance of what if Dragan Kesic instead just kicked it to the goal line every time?
Yeah, no.
And then we got to see this coverage unit, which I think is really good that they never use, because again, Fleck just has him kick it through the end zone. And then we're getting back to the whole, well, if my anger is actually directed towards the head coach, my statement to him would be, why are you paying a special teams coordinator top 25 money if you're not getting top 25 results? And why are we all okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, the kick it through the end zone again is a risk averse technique, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it's all it is. Then, and keep in mind, there were years before Dragan Kesic where they couldn't even get somebody to kick it to the goal line, and then it became a bigger problem. Now when it comes to punting, this is a recruiting thing, right? To me, like, we've seen it enough with Mark Crawford. You could argue maybe it's a coaching thing. It's just to me, it's a recruiting thing. He just doesn't have the talent, right? So you got to be able to bring someone in. But it's basically a roster management thing, because I believe he's on contract on scholarship, which is a form of a contract. But you can correct me if I'm wrong there, Ryan. They can't have that
many
scholarships.
He's also 28 years old, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's also really odd. But in the end, like, he is what he is, right? At this point, I don't think I would be real surprised if he's going to improve drastically.
I just wish they could have a punt. Like, I'm not like, and people like to look at Mark Crawford's like punts inside the 20. It's like, I look at like the last few games where Minnesota, I hope he's putting it inside the 20 when he's punting it from the opponent's like 45 yard line.
The other thing that we got really, really, spoiled.
Maybe this is just me saying I miss Pete Mortel.
Yeah, I was going to say we got real spoiled in the Pete Mortel era, because he was really good at flipping the field, but he was also very good at pinning people inside. He was really good, and there's a reason he got a cup of coffee in the NFL, because he was actually really good. Okay, so maybe
we spent too much time.
Yeah,
here.
Once again, too much time on special teams. Again, there are teams though that are really good at special teams, and
the one Minnesota's going to play this upcoming weekend.
And you also got to say Illinois has been pretty good at special teams. They've been phenomenal punting. Rutgers too has had some really good punters. But yeah, it's definitely a strategy and approach, and Minnesota has taken a certain approach that I can understandably reason with why you think it's so frustrating, Ryan. The Burns Insurance Agency brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, it's that time of year again. We're thinking about how we're going to save money for the holidays. Maybe, we have our benefits that we're thinking about changing. Why not think about changing your insurance for your car, your home, your commercial, or your residential real estate? You know, maybe your snowmobile as you're thinking about the snow coming. The Burns Insurance Agency can help you save that money you so desire.
Exactly. And just here in the last couple of weeks, he saved a couple like you and me, Luke, a couple of Joe Schmoes. He changed their home and their auto policy, saved them over $500. And you know what they did? They just asked for a free quote. So he is licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you're thinking about, boy, I wonder if I'm getting the best coverage for the best price on my home, my commercial business, auto, whatever it may be, check him out at insurancebyburns.com or shoot him an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's take a look around the Big Ten here, fellas. A number of interesting games, and I think we just have to take the most interesting one off the bat. Purdue found a way to knock off Illinois, and probably more probably the bigger headline of that game was the fact that Chase Brown went down, right? So for those of you that didn't know or didn't watch, Purdue found a way to win 34-24 over number 21 Illinois. Thing to know that Purdue becomes a spoiler makers whenever they play a ranked opponent here in the Big Ten. The Gophers were ranked, beat them. Illinois was ranked, now beat them. But you know, the Chase Brown injury is very unfortunate. I don't know what it was.
I don't know that we've got clarity on what it is.
Regardless, it didn't look good.
Yeah, it appears to be a lower leg injury, which sucks because Chase Brown, like to me, I already know who the three all Big Ten running backs are. It's Chase Brown, Blake Corum, and Mo Ibrahim. And that's not meant as a shot at Braylon Allen.
Well, anyone, but, right?
Like those three are in a tier by themselves. And Chase Brown is that entire offense. And all I could hear, you know, when I saw the news, because again, that game wrapped up as Minnesota was about to kick off, all I could hear in the back of my head was your voice, Derek, saying, if something happens, Illinois is not that deep. And that's where they lose Chase Brown. Potential, again, we don't know how significant the injury is yet. By the time you listen to this on Monday or Tuesday, we will. I'm sure I will have tweeted something out already at Ryan Burns MN on Twitter acknowledging that. But you guys got to see a lot more of this game than I did. Derek, I know you have some strong thoughts and opinions about this one.
Well, real quickly, before Chase Brown went out, I think we have confirmation now that Chase Brown was starting to wear down a bit. Again,
understandable. That dude had so many carries.
Still looked phenomenal, by the way. But
280 carries in 10 games.
They were actually making a concerted effort to throttle him in this game down. So he rotated series out a number of times. And he, again, I want to be clear, he still looked really, really good, but he had lost a little bit since the first, I'll call it the first third of the season. So, and like you said, for understandably, the interesting thing about this game to me was the other side of the ball, Purdue, two things. Number one, I think one of the huge reasons they were able to win on offense was they attacked Illinois' man press coverage all over the field, and they drew a lot of penalties. And that ended up being a huge factor in the game. Now, according to the home crowd at Illinois, they were not happy about that, as home crowds tend to be. And I'm sure that there were probably a couple of those calls that were marginal. But I don't really feel too sorry for him, because if you're going to play man press coverage against Purdue, you're going to be challenged with interference, because Purdue isn't afraid to throw into that press coverage down the field, time after time. So I give credit to Purdue. They went after the Illinois man coverage. They drew, again, several key interference calls. They were able to come away with some good passes as well. The other thing that Purdue did, which was really a shocker, but it was a credit to Jeff Brohm, they broke out in this game speed option, believe it or not.
Yes.
Which schematically for nerds like me, was a great call. The reason being, we've talked about this, and those that saw the Gophers play Illinois. Illinois has a phenomenal defense. They have great athletes, but they are not gap sound. They really let their defense, as a strategy, they let their defense fly around. So they're out of their gap. Their linebackers run. Their secondary just basically has free rein in defending the run to go wherever they want. Well, speed option corrects for that. Speed option forces a defense to defend every gap. If a gap becomes undefended, speed option will take advantage of that, and you're going to get gashed. And that's what Purdue did with Aiden O'Connell, of all people, running speed option. I mean, they didn't run it a lot, but they brought it out in the middle of the game, and it ended up picking up, you know, against a tough Illinois defense when yards are tough to come by. That ended up being a key. So two huge things to me on the Purdue side of the ball, and again, credit to their coaching staff that made a big difference. And I would just close my comments on this game by saying, Ryan, you started with this. Illinois is really fading. Injuries are really catching up with them. Now, they're still definitely in the hunt. They have a really difficult game coming up, but we are seeing, I think injuries and the season long, the bumps and bruises catching up with them.
Yeah. And we have to lead with this game because this game really opened Pandora's box in terms of how wild the West really is. Illinois came in basically in the driver's seat. You could argue now that Purdue or Iowa is in the driver's seat, depending on, how next week's games go. But it makes this, to me, this is just wildly fun. The fact some people are like, well, the West sucks. No, the West is like wildly entertaining. Every game going from here on out means something, and it always means something. The parody, I think, is really fun, and I recognize that people aren't used to that. But man, what a can of worms this opened, Ryan, with the fact that Purdue was able to get that upset victory in Champaign.
Certainly. And the number one question I'm going to get is, what has to happen for Minnesota to get to Indy? Well, I would tell you
a lot.
The number one thing they have to do, and I mentioned it earlier, is beat Iowa and Wisconsin in the final two games of the season, which is something that, if my research is correct, they have not done in the same season since 1990, which was 32 years ago. And considering I was born in August of 92, I was not alive. So they got to do something that hasn't happened in my lifetime. But then they're also going to need Illinois to lose one of their final two games, which I would imagine is going to be next week against Michigan in Ann Arbor. But then the thing is, they're going to need Purdue. If Minnesota can win out, Purdue needs to lose to either Northwestern or Indiana, which you just saw Northwestern as a Gopher fan. I don't know that that's going to happen. And then it's a rivalry game against Indiana. Now, Indiana hasn't won a game in a long time, I believe. So we're talking about it potentially, there's a lot of things that have to happen. And then the next question is, who's in control? Technically, Iowa is. If Iowa has the cleanest run out, that if Iowa just wins out, they're in Indy, which I thought I had seen the worst offense that have ever graced a Big Ten championship game last year when Michigan and Iowa played. That Iowa offense was an abomination. Well, now I get to see it this week again with Spencer Petras, which we'll get to that game here in a bit. But it's just because Minnesota lost that Purdue game, they are not in the driver's seat. But that for them to even be in the hunt here, the biggest thing Minnesota has to do, beat Iowa and Wisconsin in the same season for the first time since 1990.
All right. So as you mentioned, Indiana will get a chance at Purdue. They had their chance at Ohio State and they lost 56-14. CJ Stroud, 17-28, 297 yards, 5 touchdowns. Marvin Harrison Jr., arguably maybe the best catch I've seen in a collegiate game almost ever, with finding a way to keep that foot in bounds. I think they did this all without Travion Henderson. I mean, they're legit, guys. They moved to 10-0 on the season, 7-0 in Big Ten play. They're a national title contender. In Indiana, found a way to get an early score, but it was all for naught. They just absolutely get trounced in this one. I don't know that anybody has any more comments, but Ohio State absolutely is a national title contender in my opinion here.
I think the question we're going to start talking about is, can the Big Ten get two teams in or not? to the college football playoff.
Because even with
someone's
got to
win
the
Ohio State versus Michigan game at the end of the season. That other one doesn't get to go to Indianapolis. But from what I've seen, the Pac-12 is not going to get one in now because Luke's Washington Huskies.
I was so nervous. I was just a wreck.
You should have seen the text chain between the three of us. Luke was a little nervous Nelly in there. But it doesn't look like the Pac-12 is going to get one in. I have no idea what to think of TCU now that they're 10-0, but Texas was a 7-point home favorite in that game. So if TCU runs the table, they deserve to be in. But then it's going to become, if TCU doesn't, and now that Clemson's lost a game, is it literally going to be something to the effect of Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, and then either Tennessee or LSU? I don't know. But I think that's the thing I take away is I think the Big Ten's got a legit shot of getting two teams into the playoff.
All right. So yeah. Go ahead, Derek.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to add real quick, Ryan. Not only, I think, because Michigan and Ohio State look really, really good, but the SEC doesn't. If there was going to be a year that you were going to have two Big Ten teams in, it would happen to be this year because Alabama's not normal Alabama. Clemson's not normal Clemson out of the ACC. And the rest of the SEC, Ole Miss took one on the chin from Alabama, and Georgia's looks pretty good. But yeah, Luke, to your point, I don't see. You know, all those years when the SEC fans are trying to argue that they should have two or three teams, and this isn't it. This year is not it.
No, absolutely not. And ESPN can't manufacture the like stories to try and justify getting two of them in, right?
Because they're all losing to each other. There's not two just overly dominant SEC teams. That's what's That's what's doing them in.
Yeah, and Ohio State and Michigan both are being overly dominant teams. Michigan moves to 10-0, 7-0 in Big Ten play with a 34-3 victory over Nebraska. They absolutely just destroy them. Blake Corum on the day, 28 carries for 162 yards. He continues his stellar run. Michigan just they just look like an overpowering beast at this point. And they don't even really have to throw, even though J.J. McCarthy was 8 of 17 for 129 yards and two touchdowns. But their run game is just it's incredible to watch, Derek, just real efficient and strong.
Yeah, I mean, they're taking the momentum they came out of last year, the Big Ten championship game, and it's translated. And I think they continue to get better, whereas, Ohio State has talent that unlike no other, but they've had up and down games. I mean, look last week, they struggle against Northwestern in what was definitely a very bad weather game. But they didn't look spectacular, where Michigan they continue to look better and better each week. And again, back to our previous point, it looks like, the possibility of two Big Ten teams looks as good as it's ever been. And again, I just have to say at that showdown at the end of the year, you're going to see every college TV personality, network, whatever, they're going to go all in on that game.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only thing I would mention is Nebraska without Casey Thompson is just a disaster offensively.
Yeah, yeah, they're terrible.
Bad. So I hope Casey Thompson returns this upcoming week, but it's just Minnesota needs some help from Nebraska here if they're going to get to Indy, with Nebraska playing Wisconsin and Iowa the last 2 weeks. And the best chance for them to do that is if Casey Thompson returns as the quarterback.
All right. Have you also noticed, Ryan, that the internet has named about four or five different coaches now have signed to be the next head coach at Nebraska, just for the sake of the internet. I just hope the season ends quickly so that we don't have to have all these rumors flying around.
To wait two more weeks until the season ends that Saturday, or the regular season ends, and I would bet a large amount of money that Sunday after Thanksgiving, Nebraska announces probably, I would say, Matt Rhule or whoever it may be as the next coach.
All right, two teams going in completely opposite directions. Penn State wins 30-0 over Maryland. Maryland has now really started a backward slide that is coming, kind of seemingly
every year, ain't it?
Yeah, the stereotype for a Mike Locksley headed team. But in this game, Penn State rushes for 249 yards. Sean Clifford was fine, 12 of 23 for 139 yards, not phenomenal, but you know, they found a running game, and this has really seemingly been the difference. I think this is arguably, you know, a top 10 team. The Big Ten East is really top heavy with Michigan and Ohio State in their own tier, but Penn State is just below them, and they're really heading in a nice trajectory, Derek.
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder. I was going to say, I think the difference is they found a running game. I mean, at the beginning of the year, they were, you know, they had won some games, but just not decisively. And I think the reason was they just, going back to last year, they just hadn't been able to figure it out on the ground. They've certainly done that. And, you know, just to give a little bit of credit, we sometimes, you know, I throw shade at the Big Ten East a little bit, give a little bit of credit. Look at Penn State, you know, how good they are, and they just have no shot. I mean, other than a miracle, you know, they've got Michigan and Ohio State ahead of them, and they're sitting there at, you know, in third in the East, and they have no shot at going to the Big Ten championship game. So it's a credit to the top heavy East, but Penn State does. I mean, they're just like Michigan. They tend to look better. They've looked better and better each week.
I would say this: Penn State's a top 10 team, and I think that's with a bullet. Because you look at the non-Ohio State and Michigan games, they are 8-0, and they've won by an average of, I believe, 23 points.
Like, wow.
They have been really good. Like, to your point, I think both of you made, they're in a tier below what Ohio State and Michigan are, but I think those are two college football playoff teams. They are a team that absolutely deserves to represent the Big Ten in the Rose Bowl this year.
And they're in a tier all on their own, right? Like, it feels like it feels like to me, there's a tier just below them, and they're just all alone in that kind of second tier by themselves. Okay, Rutgers loses 21-27. Michigan State finds a way. This is a game that moves them to 5-5, 3-4 in the Big Ten. They're slowly starting to make their way back. Peyton Thorne was 19-35 for 256 yards. Michigan State again has struggled mightily at times, but they seem to be playing some of their best football in the season here, Derek, and got a win against Rutgers.
Well, yeah, well, just what a wild ride for the Michigan State fan base. I mean, they looked exceptional early in the year, and then they looked like they couldn't beat anybody, and they huge win last week against Illinois, and then now, you know, able to put together two in a row. But,
three of their last four. Again, they've beaten Wisconsin, Illinois, and Rutgers, and their lone loss there is to Michigan. So.
And you know, last week with all of the players out, suspended coming out of the Michigan game. So it's been an up and you said it, Luke. It's been a huge up and down year. There's probably isn't a team in the Big Ten that's had higher highs and lower lows than Michigan State.
The thing that surprised me in this game, just quickly, is Michigan State found a running game. Their running backs in this game against Rutgers' run defense, which had been really good coming into this, 27 carries for 165 yards. And this was a Michigan State team that has struggled immensely to run the ball all season. They found something at home against Rutgers.
All right, so we intentionally left the Iowa and Wisconsin game for last, and that's because the Gophers now play Iowa and Wisconsin in their last two games. Wouldn't want to have it any other way. Iowa finds a way 24-10 in this one. Frankly speaking, guys, like, this was a head scratcher for me. The whole thing, it was just very kind of peak Iowa. And that's not a knock on them. It's just they have a unique identity in finding ways to win. So I want to go a little bit deeper in this one. But, you know, Wisconsin leads off the game, getting the first points on the board with a 32-yard field goal. In the second quarter, Iowa blocks a punt, if memory serves correctly, and then has a two-play 17-yard drive for a touchdown, short field. Then they come back and they get their first touchdown of the game with a 32-yard interception return by Cooper DeJean, which, by the way, he has been just phenomenal this season. And then Wisconsin goes down and scores and a touchdown, a 7-play 75-yard drive. So you have a halftime score of 14-10. And then Spencer Petras has a 1-yard touchdown run on a 5-play 18-yard drive. Was it a fumble?
It was a long Cooper DeJean punt return.
Punt return.
That's what it was. I couldn't keep it all straight. And then Iowa finishes out the game with a 44-yard field goal for scoring drives on their longest. Now, keep this in mind. Their longest drive that resulted in a score of 11 plays, 27 yards. So, again, this is a point where you can talk about how defense and special teams can be an asset in your scoring game, because here, Iowa offensively was not particularly great, fellas. On the day, like from a team stat perspective, they amassed 146 yards of total offense. They weren't awesome. Wisconsin's defense was very good, but their defense and special teams, Derek, is really what put them in a position to win this game 24-10.
Yeah, I mean, just to single out one area, I mean, Iowa's punt block / return, you could make a case that that won the game. I mean, that one unit on special teams, because as you already pointed out, blocked a punt inside Wisconsin's 20, and then returned a punt inside Wisconsin's 25, I believe, if not 20, that set up two scores. So that, you know, we just to hammer the point home here, we talk about special teams being able to be an asset. That one special teams unit, punt block / return, you could make a case won the game for Iowa.
I know it. I know our friends from Eyes on Big are probably listening to this in Greek. I know you hate when I say this, but I just bugs the absolute crap out of me that Iowa scores 24 points and they don't have a scoring drive longer than 27 yards. It's the most unsustainable, sustainable thing, and it never is not going to bug me, because their defense is so good that they are able to put their special teams in advantageous situations to make plays, and they do. You know, whether that's the opposing punter's backed up deep in his own end, so they get pressure on the punter, it's a bad punt, and then Cooper DeJean does his thing, or they block a punt. It's just, 24 points off of a blocked punt, essentially, a long punt return, and then an interception return, and Iowa scores 24 points while totaling 146 total yards. Just, it's incredible, and it just makes me stutter. And
well, I think what you're saying, Ryan, is like that sort of stat line from any other team you might see once every 5 years. You'll see that four or five times
in
a year.
Season.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, and even the pick six. Again, I don't want to take too much credit away from Iowa. Their defense is special, and we'll talk about that. But the pick six, I mean, Graham Mertz just
– bad throw.
He just – in the flat just throws it right to the – I mean, the defender could have walked into the end zone. I mean, it was just – yeah, it was – they continue to do it, though. I mean, it's four or five times a year they have these games.
And that's where you look at these two teams, and Minnesota and Iowa are having very kind of – I would say similar type of trajectories right now. Both teams lost the first three games of October. Both teams had two of those three losses to ranked teams. And now both teams have won three consecutive games coming into the battle for the Floyd of Rosedale. So 3 o'clock on Fox, 0-5. You're going to hear it all week. PJ Fleck is 0-5 against Kirk Ferentz in Iowa. And what do we we'll have a lot of time to get into it on the preview episode later this week. But while we have Derek here, it's just,
yeah.
Derek, we saw the little wrinkles last year with Minnesota's running scheme going to some toss-based stuff, trying to get them east-west. And I look at Minnesota's offense right now and the way it's currently constructed, and the number one thing I want to have us tackle before we just sign off here, because, again, there'll be plenty of time to talk about it, is – if Tanner Morgan is healthy, which is a big if still, because it doesn't sound like Tanner practiced much, if at all, last week, which quarterback do you go with? And I know what my answer is. You can't sway me one way or another. But I want to hear what both of you would say, knowing that this Iowa defense and this Iowa football team the way that they win football games in 2022 is they capitalize off mistakes. They capitalize off for turnovers. And so when you look at the current constructs of Minnesota's offense going against Iowa's defense, Derek, let's start with you and then go to Luke. If Tanner Morgan is healthy to play in this game, which quarterback do you go to?
Well, I would say the way that Iowa's defense is constructed and the way that Minnesota's receiving corps has struggled, I just don't see with either quarterback that you're going to get a – you'll get nothing downfield, first of all. Iowa just doesn't give up big plays. So I wouldn't expect that out of either. I think the passing game will be limited with either one. But I would go with Ethan because I believe his ability to evade and get some yards in the running game, I think could be a little bit of an asset. It's going to be tough no matter what, and yards – I mean, not just scoring, not just first down, yards, period, are going to be tough to come by against this Iowa defense. So I would go with Ethan because I just think his ability to maybe keep a couple times on zone read and his ability to just, whether it be a bootleg, a sprint out, his ability to just tuck and run for a couple first downs, I think could be an asset.
Yeah, running yards are going to be a premium against Iowa. They always are. If you look at this game between Iowa and Wisconsin, Wisconsin averaged 1.6 yards per carry. Iowa, conversely, averaged 1.2 if you include sacks for both of them. So running yards are going to be a premium. I will say this, though. I'm probably with Derek. I think the fleet of footness or the improvisation that Ethan can make with his feet and the fact that he will keep and be an asset in the run game is probably why I'd go with Ethan. That said, I do think that first and foremost Tanner needs to be healthy to give it a go, and I don't know what that is, and I don't know that we can even factor that into this hypothetical question you're asking, Ryan, but I do think that the fact that Ethan's feet are an asset makes this offense a little bit more multiple. And frankly, it's a new wrinkle in this saga between Ferentz and Fleck, right? You know, they were able to, throw out, but bench Petras last year, and that was all the difference in the world, right?
God bless it, Luke. You took my thunder. That won Iowa the game last year was Alex Padilla coming in and providing mobility for the statue that is Spencer Petras. And looks like it's going to be the Spencer Petras show. We'll get into that in the preview episode. But it's just for the current construct of this Minnesota offense right now, I would also agree with all of you that I would go with Ethan just to give you something that if you can't get open against the secondary, Ethan can at least give you something with his legs to keep you on schedule, where if it's maybe a sack or maybe something near the line, if you can get to second and 7 instead of second and 11 in a game like this, where if you haven't seen the Vegas line, it opened as Minnesota -2, over under, I believe, is 32 points. So Vegas thinks this game is going to be something like 17-14. This game is not going to be visually appealing if you want points and you want offensive explosions. It's just not. So when points are at a premium, when possessions are at a premium, and again, I can assure you that PJ Fleck and his staff are well aware that they have not beaten Iowa.
All right. So I have one question for Derek here. You know, offensively, Iowa has struggled a lot, and we know that. And consistency hasn't been their strong suit. What surprised me all season is Iowa's inability to run the ball consistently. Now they had a phenomenal performance from Caleb Johnson in the Purdue game, which they won 24-3, where he had 22 carries and 200 yards. But like, what do you expect the identity of Iowa's offense to be in this specific game? Because it is not the same offense that we've seen year in and year out. And like, they don't have the playmakers that they've had in years past.
Yeah. Well, they're going to try to avoid pressure because that's what's killed them. Spencer Petras has not done well at all under pressure. And so what teams have done consequently is because they don't fear the passing attack is they bring pressure. They bring run blitzes. They bring pass blitzes. So what I was trying to do is run sideline to sideline flood routes. They try and target their tight end the most. I mean, that's that with typically out routes or over routes. So they'll try and do that and throw underneath the safety and, you know, really they don't get much downfield. And if they can figure something out in the run game, they'll do that as well. But mainly what their strategy has been, and keep in mind, before the Wisconsin game, they had managed to come up with some offense. I mean, they'd put some points on the board and some yards. So they've been able to manufacture some things. It seemed like they had things, you know, figured out to some degree, but I think that's more of a testament to Wisconsin's defense coming together.
Yeah.
They were able to really shut down Iowa's offense. But I guess to answer your question, Luke, I think that they're going to try and probably move the pocket as much as they can. And I just don't know that they feel they're going to be able to run through or over Minnesota's defense. Their coaching staff is smarter than that. So they're probably going to try and limit possessions. They're going to try and win with their defense and special teams. I mean,
all right. So we'll obviously preview this game as we do every single game. So make sure to check that out. You know, it's fun to break down yet another win. We want to thank our sponsors for making this all possible. Do go and support them. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.